Ashley Wass was playing Switzerland from Les Années de Pèlerinage, played at the Wigmore Hall last Monday. Well, next Monday, the lunchtime concert will be given by the cellist Alisa Weilerstein. That's at 1 o'clock on Monday.
The 2011 BBC Proms. The world's greatest classical music festival returns from Friday the 15th of July to Saturday the 10th of September. For full details of the season, go online to bbc.co.uk/proms or consult the BBC Proms Guide, available now.
Well, looking ahead an hour this afternoon in Jazz Library, the pianist, composer and bandleader Django Bates will be joining Alan Shipton to look back over his recorded career. But now, just after 3 o'clock, time for World Roots with Rita Ray.
This week we're in the city of Edinburgh, the Athens of the North, so called because it was once a major hub of the Enlightenment, and it's still a great centre of learning. Today at the city's Usher Hall, we're going to be educated and switched on to a brand of music called Afrobeat. This music was created by one of Africa's most celebrated and controversial artists, Fela Kuti, and this has become his family's trademark. Headlining the African Soul Rebels tour, Fela's youngest son, Sheyun, takes to the stage with his father's band, Egypt 80. This is the same band that Sheyun played with at the age of 8, and 19 years later, he is the leader of the band. Playing songs from his brand new album, produced by Brian Eno, From Africa with Fury, Rise. We'll be right back.
This one is called Slave Masters, everybody. When you walk up, my brother, just look at your back.
Look your back.
When you walk up, my sister.
Our ear don't fool for your words. Our stomachs feel empty. Our ear don't fool for your words. Our stomachs feel empty. Our ear don't fool for your words. Our stomachs feel empty. Our ear don't fool for your words. Our stomachs feel empty.
Down.
I'm deep in the bowels of the usher hall in the conductor's suite, sneaking a couple of minutes from Sheyun Kuti before he goes on stage. Sheyun, welcome to World Roots.
Oh, thank you. I'm happy to be here.
When I hear the name Kuti, I think of Afrobeat, the style of music that your father created. For those of us who don't know, could you tell us what Afrobeat is?
Well, I think you should have said, you know, when you hear Anikolapu Kuti, because I think Kuti, that the family itself is great for so many things other than music. You know, my great-grandfather had a book published about him here in the UK. He had a recording as well, you know.
And your grandmother was a real activist. Human rights activist.
Yeah, I think she turned the family political as well, because before her, everybody in the family was kind of towing the line. So, but, you know, now with Afrobeat music, I think it brings that political part of the family out, you know. It makes it musical. My dad, being a musician, you know, tried to speak for his people with Afrobeat. So it was created for this reason. You know, Afrobeat was created to give the people of Africa a voice.
And how important are lyrics to Afrobeat?
Oh, wow. I think, you know, just like any genre, lyrics are extremely, you know, important. You know, just that in commercial music, it is catchy lyrics that's important, and in Afrobeat it is a message in your lyrics that's important, you know.
And talking about the message, your family have been activists and protesters crying out against oppression and injustice and corruption for more than 40 years now. And unfortunately, the political climate then is kind of similar to the political climate now. I'd like to know how you're going to change things, how you're going to make a difference.
Well, I think the difference I'm making is that I'm making my music and I'm talking about it. You know, I don't envision like, oh, my music is going to change the world. No, I just play my music to do my part, you know. I think my father had it tough, you know, because during his time, he was the only person thinking like that. You know, he was a revolutionary in his thinking. Not a lot of people believed what he was saying. Because, you know, most people were just freshly moving from the rural areas to Lagos, and there were a few more opportunities than there was today. Things were cheaper for people. People could afford things, you know. And they said, oh, what's this fella man talking about? He's just trying to stir trouble. So the government could easily, you know, pass their propaganda about him across, and he was doing a lot of things that were not Africans weren't used to. You know, because a lot of Africans were exposed in 1970, trust me. Probably we didn't have 10,000 graduates in the whole continent at 1970. You know, so you have to realize, fella is someone that, you know, he's been around the world already at a young age. You know, he's smoking marijuana, living with plenty of women, you know. Things that are usual for rock stars in the West, but, you know, not for, in Africa, you know. So it was easy for people to play him off. Oh, he's crazy. He's just a bad man trying to give your kids bad influence and that. You know, but now in my time, you know, more people understand what's going on. More people have seen the world. You know, more people are educated, and you know, Africa is developing rapidly in terms of the minds of the people. You know, independently, not because of our education from the government, but our suffering is educating us in Africa thoroughly, and people are beginning to understand what's really going on. You know, and I think to be a part of this for me, it's important. You know, not necessarily because, you know, I see my music as being the ultimate changing catalyst, you know, but I see my part as being played, you know, and the more I can do this, the more I'll continue to do it, and I hope a lot of people catch on, because it's not a Kuti affair. The liberation of Africa and the speaking up of Nigeria is not a Kuti affair. I feel everybody should be involved, you know. It just takes time for them to become as passionate as we were, you know. You have to realize I was brought up in this. You know, so I actually understand it was like an education for me. Most people don't have that privilege, you know, but now on their own, they're discovering, and there's a lot of interest in what's going on in Africa now from the youth of Africa themselves.
I remembered the fact that your father said that music was the weapon, and you have been creating a music using the form of Afrobeat to get your message out there. Your new album is called From Africa with Fury, Rise. So, I mean, right there, there's a huge, huge statement. So I'd like to kind of get from you what your creative process was in making this album.
It was time to make the album, you know, and, you know, when lyrically, you know, for the album, you know, you have to study your environment, as I said, you know. I study African politics, I study people of Africa, I live with the common people of Africa every day. I don't live in some high-class area, you know. I live where I was born, where I've grown up all my life, that's where I still live, you know. So I still see people struggling every day, trying to make things happen, you know. So I draw inspiration from them, you know. I like to get inspiration from what's around me. That's what goes to help me write my music.
And you said you like to have the live feel in your recordings. So did you record these songs live all together?
Yeah. In Brazil, we all sat down, you know, and after the, you know, I finished my second world tour on the first album. It was 2 years already. It was 2010, and my first album came out.
Many Things.
Yeah, 08, you know, and I was like, it's 2010, and we need to start working on an album, you know.
So you recorded these songs live, and then you took them to Brian Eno. Why was it that you took it to Brian Eno?
Well, I didn't take it to him per se. I already asked him, you know, and he said I could bring it, you know, so. And I think it was Brian Eno because I just broke up with my old record label and my management, you know. So when I was recording this album, I had no record label and no money. And Brian was the only one that was ready to do it for free, you know, so that put him on top of the list.
And what did he bring to this album?
He did a lot of things on the music, you know. Went from being a good life CD, good life music to a good life CD, you know. Playing live music and making a live CD, two different things. I think he made it a really good live CD.
I'd like to just quickly talk about Egypt 80.
Okay.
You first started playing with them when you were 8 years old.
Long time, 20 years now.
How did you make the transition from you being the young boy who was playing around and then fronting the band to now being the leader of the band? I mean, how did you manage that?
I can honestly say, like, there was no effort to it at all. I was 8. I was already opening the shows for my dad, singing with the band. So when he died and the family tried to shut the band down, all I did was say, oh, you can shut the band down, because I'm still playing with them and I would like to continue playing with them. And they were like, okay, you can play with them, just don't come here and ask us for any assistance because we don't think it's a viable, blah, 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 blah. And we kept playing, and it took us a long time, about 10 years, to actually gather momentum and gain interest and be able to break and come get a record deal and go on tours and start making any money. It took 10 years, but we just kept playing. And when it was time, when we're out, I think the only time I'm the leader of the band is when we have to do things like this. You know, like, you're the leader, go and talk to the press. Yeah.
And could you just tell me who the longest serving members of the band are?
No, I think my band actually has the longest serving member of any band in the world today, with Baba Ani, who's just Leko Ani Mashaun, 46 years in the band now. So wow. I think that says it all.
You've been playing Afrobeat since you were 8 years old. It's been part of you since you were born. Now, you've went to university, you studied music and performance, drama. You've been in different types of band and played different types of music. Why, when you could have made a quick getaway into something else, did you embrace Afrobeat?
Growing up as a kid, you know, I really didn't fancy Afrobeat much, because I realized really that Afrobeat is not just music, it's a way of life. You know, you play Afrobeat music, then you can only send a certain kind of message, live a certain kind of life, and achieve a certain kind of success. So, you know, it took my adult mind of, you know, I was 21, 22, to make the decision of actually saying, yeah, you know, I think Afrobeat is the way to go. You know, you have to make sacrifices to achieve something. So that is why I actually chose Afrobeat, because I actually started believing more and more in what it stood for, not as Fela's son, but as an artist that wants something to happen for his people.
Thank you. Steal and bastard your brother. When you break him house down to build your own. You went to beat and kill and rape our sisters.
When you're killing children, no remorse. When you send our men and women to war, to die and kill for what you believe in. They want to see a brighter day. The children play in nothing. I want to see a happy face. With the nation growing, guiding. You want to make the things they had for me. You try to hide away. But you won't go. I need a pass, okay, oh.
Music.
That was You Can Run by Sheyun Kuti, fronting Egypt 80, and he is being all over the stage, dancing, firing off his incendiary Afrobeat message and his wonderful Afrobeat rhythms. Horns, dancing girls, and the remarkable Babani on keyboards. At 74, he's still going strong, dancing and enjoying himself. And the audience have lapped it up. They are demanding more, and yes, they're going to do another number. We'll be right back.
Mosquito Song by Cheyenne Kuti and Egypt 80, ending today's edition of World Roots, which was presented by Rita Ray and produced by Sam Hickling. Next week on World Roots, Lopa Qatari and Jamila Siddiqui present highlights from the Darbar Festival of Indian Classical Music, held last month at King's Place in London.
And that's all from me for a while, actually. I'm going to be taking a break from the programme for a bit.
And she did. But now she's back.
It's fantastic to be coming back to Lake Junction. I did quite a bit of travelling last year from home to Kyoto by train, so came across quite a lot of new music en route. Well, Fiona, Max and I are going to be taking it in turns to present the programme from now on, so listeners are going to be treated to an even broader range of musical choices.
Verity Sharp returns to Lake Junction.
Lake Junction is still such a rich and diverse musical haven.
Tuesday, Wednesday and Thursday nights at 11 o'clock on BBC Radio 3. And also, when you choose, at bbc.co.uk/radio3.
In an hour's time, Geoffrey Smith will be here with Jazz Record Requests, but now it's time for Jazz Library with Alan Shipton.
Welcome to the Playhouse in Cheltenham at the Cheltenham Jazz Festival 2011 for a very special edition of Jazz Library. And I'm joined today by a musician who I've long admired and strangely seemed to have heard almost all the music we'll be talking about today live as it happened during the last few years. But please give a Cheltenham Jazz Festival welcome to Django Bates. Well, Django, yesterday here at the festival with your new band, you were playing music which involved a young generation of musicians. But back in the 1980s, that was what everybody said about Loose Tubes. It was the band that was the young generation of the time making new music. And I thought it'd be a good place to start with that. So how did your involvement with Loose Tubes begin?
I got a call out of the blue saying, would you like to come to a big band rehearsal workshop? And those three words, all of them, didn't really inspire me. The workshop, the big band, the rehearsal. Having been in some big bands as a young player, it was normally playing great Count Basie charts and stuff where the piano waits 16 bars and then goes bliplong in a Count Basie style. So I wasn't massively into it. And the call came from Graham Collier. And I said, no, my experience with big bands hasn't been great. And he said, no, but you don't understand. This is different. I really think you should come along and give it a try. So I went, and actually there were two other piano players there already and a great sprawling room of musicians. But the music was very different, and I picked up from that experience that this whole possibility, well, there was a massive potential here to try out writing for so many musicians and just explore the possibilities. And so I came back the next week with a piece, I think it was Yellow Hill or Eden Express, and they played that and it just kind of launched from there.
Well, the piece we're going to hear from an album called Dancing on Frith Street, which you brought out on your own Lost Marble label, looking back, I think, at September 1990.
Yeah.
This is quite early Bates composition, but you've been writing for quite a bit by this stage, haven't you?
Yeah, as soon as that thing kicked off and the Yellow Hill worked and Eden Express was a different kind of experiment, and then I think I wrote Rowing Boat Delineation Egg, which was exploring the humorous possibilities and going back to some kind of trad jazz sounds. I just got the bug, really, and wanted to carry on from there. I just kept on writing. I think discovering metal was part of some music that I was asked to write for the Cologne Radio Big Band, and it became part of the Loose Tubes set. And, yeah, there was just a great outpouring of music and ideas at that stage, yeah.
So let's listen to Discovering Metal. Thank you. part of Discovering Metal from Dancing on Fifth Street on the Lost Marble label by Loose Tubes in September 1990. And Django, interesting actually that in that lineup, a number of musicians who are now appearing in bands on this very festival, as Chris Batchelor is here today with Big Air, there's Martin France on drums who had his band Spin Marvel yesterday, and your good self.
Yeah, we're all still alive, digging away. I feel like I should say something in defence of that track, having just heard it come bursting out. Just reminded me that every time I wrote a piece for Loose Tubes, it was about trying to find some other step of music that I didn't associate with big bands or with jazz. And so that one was kind of exploring naive, primitive, thuggish area of music and trying to turn that into something that we could comment on. It just reminded me as it came bursting in there. And indeed, yes, you hear those people mentioned and many other important musicians on that music. And here they are going through the same process, I think, still trying to create new, unexpected events in music.
The next piece we're going to play, which is actually under your own name, but with a very similarly sized lineup from 3 years later, was a piece that you'd done already with Loose Tubes. The piece is called Sad Africa, off the album called Summer Fruits and Unrest. I was pleased to see somebody here yesterday wearing the T-shirt from that band with all the personnel on the back of the shirt. Couldn't quite read them all because the back of the chair in front of me was obscuring it, but there they all were, all the names of the band. And if you want to know them, by the way, they'll be on the programme's website. That's bbc.co.uk/radio3/jazzlibrary. This is a studio version of the piece by the band, I guess at the beginning of that tour that the T-shirt related to.
Yeah, I mean, this was the beginning of a magical period of time when I was lucky enough to have somebody telling me to make albums and saying, OK, what's the next thing going to be and what's the thing after that going to be, and that these albums would actually be for sale, wow, in shops. And they'd have proper covers designed by people like Steve Byram, wonderful designer who designed the T-shirt, of course. It was really important to have that support, moral support. What you're doing is worthy of somebody taking some commercial interest in it and helping it on its way.
Now, when this liner note was written in 1993, although things were changing in South Africa, you did say in the liner note, this piece was written some years ago and nothing much has changed. You used to talk quite a lot, I remember, on live gigs about the piece and your views about things. I mean, the piece was motivated by what had been going on in that country, I guess.
Certainly, but also on a more personal level, I played with Dudu Pakwana and Tebi Lipere, Churchill Jalobi, Pinisasal. In Dudu's band, he was a South African living in London, not able to go back home. So I was very aware of the reality of that, but also aware of the beauty of that music and the joy in it and the pain and that kind of mixture of, I suppose, just very emotional music. But so that helped me with the idea of wanting to write Sad Africa. We played it outside the South African embassy as part of a trying to raise awareness and just keep the subject out there. Thank you.
Sonatas Sad Africa from Summerfruits and Unrest, originally out on the JMT label but now reissued on Winter and Winter, recorded in June 1993. And Django, yes, another connection you pointed out as that was playing with this festival here at Cheltenham.
Yeah, that alto solo was Steve Buckley, who's playing with Big Air tonight. And it's a rare treat for him to be playing here, and very glad about that. And it's a very fast version, I realised. It can be played in many different ways, and that would be the fastest one around.
The next piece we're going to hear is a very different side of your work, although it's something that those of us lucky enough to be at your concert here yesterday heard in Cheltenham, which is you playing solo piano. And the album called Autumn Fires and Green Shoots is a display of that. I must say, as an attendee of several live gigs at that period, I hadn't realised until I heard you playing a solo gig, I think at the Queen Elizabeth Hall that same year, that you've got a lot of things to say.